We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast for Week 13, the Week 13 preview brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. We are really getting into the stretch run of the season here, and we're being treated to a nice little Thursday game between the Saints and the Cowboys to lead us off here, Mario. Again, I'm your host, John McKechnie. And, you know, this is one of those weird things that I have an appreciation for because it makes a lot of sense. Having both these teams play on a Thursday after having played last Thursday, I just kind of like the ability to, or expanding the likelihood of this game not being a complete slop fest the way that we often see Thursday night games. However, and there's also no Taysom or no Trevor Siemian in this one to muck things up even further. But what's your expectation here with the Cowboys coming off the disappointing loss on Thanksgiving Day and the Saints just kind of being completely overmatched for 60 minutes against the Bills?
Yeah, it's a pretty strange matchup, and the Thursday variable would normally make it tougher for passing games. So Taysom Hill stepping in those circumstances, I guess you might be especially pessimistic for him as a passer, but I don't know. I think there's also a chance that at least for the first half or something like that, the Saints offense kind of catches the Dallas defense by surprise, not so much because they don't realize that Taysom Hill is going to run a lot more than Siemian. Obviously they know that. It's kind of a different deal to really see it in practice after, seeing it on film a year and a half ago or whatever it's been. And then like being in the same rhythm that you would have been back then is just a little different. And maybe a couple things that weren't on tape kind of just catch them by surprise for a big play here and there, getting the Saints into scoring range. Maybe that's enough to make it a little closer than it otherwise would be, but I don't really see how the Saints win it. And, it's not just that Taysom Hill is probably a bad passer. It's, of course, a worse supporting cast at the pass catching positions than the last time we saw Taysom Hill, and the offensive line is destroyed by injury. So it's like, as a Taysom Hill critic, I am not inclined to make excuses for him. And yet, if he does really badly in this setting, I don't really think you could criticize him too much for it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So I know that Hill was kind of a trendy waiver wire pickup this week. You think there's any utility in him that, would you start him? Or who, where would you draw the line as to?
If you have to start him, if you have to start him, I wouldn't feel terrible about it because Dallas does give up some big plays. They're aggressive on defense. And if they do start crashing the run hard enough, then a guy like Callaway, especially Deontay Harris, I guess, they can slip by the secondary for a big play. And it could be like a bad day passing overall. And Hill could still make it useful for fantasy owners just with one big play as a passer, because the returns as a runner should be pretty reliable. And thankfully, unlike the NCAA, they don't subtract your rushing yardage when you get sacked. So if this were a BYU game, maybe Taysom Hill would have like 20 attempts for 35 yards or something like that. But since it's an NFL game, he should have, 14 for 70 or something like that.
Okay. So we expect him get it done on the ground. What's your level of confidence in Mark Ingram for this evening under the presumption that Alvin Kamara does not play?
So I guess if Taysom Hill does well, it should be a pretty good volume projection for Ingram. And I don't know what's a fair expectation for his actual effectiveness, but if they can give him 18 plus carries, there's a chance that he kind of just wears down the Dallas defense. And if it's good field position that they develop over the course of the game, maybe he gets into scoring range. So it's the closer the game is, the better for Ingram. Of course, I guess it's just I have trouble imagining what the offensive line will be capable of down both their starting tackles. And the Stanford guy's been out for a while. So there's a lot working against them here. And it just depends on whether Hill keeps it together, because if he falls apart, that's probably how Dallas ends up covering, because Hill probably can't really play catch up as a passer.
Yeah, I don't think so either. That would just kind of be the death knell for the Saints if they were to fall behind. That's a script that they can't afford. They got to have their defense keep Dallas's offense in check. So speaking of Dallas's offense, we do have a question from our guy Joe Saviano. Wants to know, which Cowboys receiver do you like this week in PPR? So this is, I guess, under the assumption that Lamb's good to go and Amari Cooper likely trending back towards a return as well.
Yeah, so this is a tough one. As far as the Cooper question, I prefer Lamb either way, just because he seems like he's just crazy. The reason it might not even be close is that we don't really know what kind of shape Cooper is in. Like, he might not be if he wasn't vaccinated, especially, he might have kind of just bad lungs for a while. So with Cedric Wilson out, you know, it's either like CeeDee Lamb kind of has a pretty decent return on like 14 targets here, or Dak Prescott struggles to get to 200 yards. And I guess either of those is possible, but I kind of like the first one more.
And with that wrinkle baked in there with Dallas's pass catching core being a little bit undermanned right now. And, you know, I think you bring up a great point when it comes to Cooper. You can't really bet on full effectiveness from him this evening. Where are you with Ezekiel Elliott? I feel like his usage has been down in recent weeks in a way that we really haven't seen in his entire career. This is a tough Saints run defense. How are you expecting him to do this evening?
The past couple weeks have been pretty much the same with him each time. It's like he's able to do a little something just because he knows how to play running back, and he's naturally good at thinking like a running back. But you can tell the wheels just aren't really going, and I don't really know what the point is of having him out there. I'm sure he wants to just, as a competitor, always wants to be out there. But you look at what he's done the past two or three weeks or whatever, it's tough for me to see why they'd even want him active. Like, Corey Clement can give them what they've gotten from Zeke lately. And that's clearly because Zeke is hurt. Like, it's not, that would normally never be the case. So, like, Zeke, when he's healthy, I say is definitely better than Pollard, first of all. And second of all, probably just one of the best running backs in the NFL. But lately, he's pretty clearly not been as effective on a per snap basis as Pollard. And I can only imagine that they keep Zeke Elliott in the first place, active in the first place, because they just don't want to give Pollard 40 snaps either, which makes enough sense. He's only like 200 pounds at 6 foot. So I get it. But then put Clement out there, put anybody really. Should have signed Dontrell Hilliard a month ago or something. But yeah, I think Zeke is clearly not himself. And until he is himself, I don't know what we can fairly expect of him.
Yeah, so what? Once again, another year where the first round running backs, a lot of landmines in there from redraft as it pertains to where they are heading in close to the fantasy playoffs. Let's get on over to Sunday's slate. Let's kick things off. We got Indianapolis traveling to Houston to face the Texans. This is going to be a recurring theme throughout the show. We have a lot of road underdogs this week. Cowboys, I'm sorry. Also, road favorites this week, home underdogs. So we have Indy 9 points favorites going up against the Texans. Texans can be scrappy, as we've seen before. Indianapolis coming off of their first loss in a little bit. And, you know, it was against the Bucs, so you give them something of a pass, even though that game was at home. They were really taking it to Tampa Bay in that first half there. What are your expectations on this one? I feel like Indianapolis has been fairly predictable as far as where the fantasy output's coming from. You know, Taylor, obviously the running back one in fantasy this year. Pittman's guy you're starting every single week. Wentz is someone that I think if you picked him up midseason, you're probably starting him unless you have a much better option. But other than that, I mean, are you in on Jack Doyle after the week that he had a week ago going up against Houston? Anything else to see here from this Indy offense?
Yeah, the 9-10 points might be a bit much, if only because the Colts might not use their full playbook in this one. I realize that they have to win. It's a must-win game, being 6-6, but they probably can take care of that without acting so desperate as to, you know, pull out all the best plays that they were probably using last week, you know, like the plays that do make Jack Doyle look good. And I don't think he normally does. So I think Doyle is fine in the sense that he's probably going to be on the field a lot for an offense that's probably going to move the ball pretty well, probably get in scoring range quite a bit. But he will never really like win a play. And I have trouble projecting a guy like that because I feel like it's always circumstances that bring out the good result. And as far as you can infer that, it pretty much ends with he's playing this many snaps and an offense we expect to score this many points. And that's pretty good. And, you know, you hope for the best, I suppose.
Yeah, I view him more as a DFS type of option than someone that I would probably be starting in a regular league. We got a couple listener questions here before we get to the Houston side of this one. So J-Red got a couple quarterbacks that he's bouncing around here. We got Russell Wilson or Joe Burrow can also pick up Taylor Heinicke. I think my base inclination there is to go with Burrow. I can't. Russ looked a little bit better this past week against Washington, but I think Burrow has a nice setup. That game total over under 50.5, I believe. They're at home. The offense obviously looked awesome a week ago against Pittsburgh coming off the bye, I believe. So for me, it's Burrow. Heinicke probably second of that group. So I guess jumping off of that, would you drop Russ for Heinicke?
I mean, he could. Russell Wilson is not useful right now. I guess it's just a question of can that finger get any better? And I have no idea. I feel like we haven't really seen any solid reporting on just what he's dealing with and like why he's bad, like why his finger won't work. Because I'm generously assuming his finger is busted and that's why he looks impossibly bad, like worse than Geno Smith what did, certainly. So that could change, but I don't see any reason to assume it will. Therefore, sure, go ahead, pick up Heinicke. Don't think it's mandatory or anything, especially this week. I don't really like that match. I don't know how to figure out Heinicke, to be fair. Like, I don't it's not often that I'm totally in line with his results. Like a few times I was getting my hopes up and he disappointed, and then other times when I kind of wrote him off, like especially that Panthers game, I kind of wrote him off. He had a good game. So with that said, I am concerned about that Vegas matchup because I just hate that pass rush. And you know, guy like Hayward, when he has a pass rush like that, it doesn't matter that he's slow. So if Heinicke needs to let it rip, you know, when McLaurin's only 10 yards downfield, it doesn't matter that Hayward can't cover him for 25, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point. That Raiders pass rush has been automatic pretty much all year. Going back real quick, we got lots of interaction today here. Our guy CB wants to know, would you go with Hunter Renfro over Zeke in your flex this week, assuming this is PPR?
Man, that's a tough one. The way I would phrase that is I probably would myself, but I can't really advise anyone else to. It feels like one of those things I'm not supposed to say, but if it were my lineup, I actually do prefer Renfro. I think if it's PPR, right? It's PPR.
Yeah.
Or okay,
yeah.
We'll assume it's PPR. I mean, it's a good matchup for him.
It absolutely is. So, yeah, we're Renfro guys after that fake punt tackle that he had a couple months ago at this point. Jeez. J-Red, also one more here from him before we keep breaking things down. With Swift out, Ronald Jones, Hines, Burkhead, Tevin Coleman, or Brandon Bolden has the Bills defense? I think I'd probably go Tevin Coleman.
Is this PPR? Sorry, I missed that. Is the same?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, those. I think there's a case to make for a handful of those guys. I might actually lean Hines, just because the same reason as you might justify Jack Doyle, I guess. Only I might sound critical of Hines a lot, but he is useful enough. It's just the people who are saying like, oh, they got to get him on the field more. Like, no, you don't need to get him more on the field than the best running back in the NFL. Shut up. But he is useful within the context of we're throwing the ball. You know, he's fast. He can catch it. It works. It's fine. You have a use for that sometimes.
And I think that is a good point when it comes to Hines. Coleman, it's mostly a workload thing. But I think you might have extracted one of his better performances that you could expect a week ago. I don't know if the Eagles will be quite as forgiving this time around. Anything to add on the Texan side of this one before we jump on over to Giants Dolphins?
No, I can't figure them out at all. I don't understand them.
Well, they can't figure themselves out either.
Yeah, the weekly, the totally scrapped and like flipped upside down game plans from week to week is, I don't know what they're, I actually cannot figure out a single reason why they would be doing this stuff. So I don't understand them. They're crazy.
It's goofy. All right. Giants, Dolphins, 4-point favorites in this one at home. Giants coming off of a slugfest victory against a divisional opponent a week ago. They got the worst game that you could really get out of a guy like Jalen Hurts. They had something to do with that, of course. But now they got to go down to Miami. Miami playing well of late. They haven't beaten a who's who necessarily, but seem to be playing better. So where are you with this one?
Well, two very weird teams. I guess I wish I had splits on what Daniel Jones's stats are against the Blitz, because I don't know what it is. And I could imagine it being either way. Like, I could imagine him being really, really bad at it, or if it's the kind of blitzing, especially where it's kind of a bluff, you know, I don't think bluffs work against Jones, because he doesn't discern, you know, the hints or the subtleties. Like, he's just chucking it. He's just going that one speed that he does. And I guess you would worry about a guy like him making wrong reads. And even when he makes the right read, he's never particularly accurate. But I don't know. It's like if the Dolphins do a thing where they're just kind of like suicide blitzing and they leave Kenny Golladay one-on-one with anyone in particular, I could see Golladay winning that, even if it's kind of like a ugly looking throw. And even if Jones didn't really understand what was going on when he threw it, you know, if you go one-on-one with a guy like as big as Golladay with the range that he does, or the speed of Slayton, Ross, there's a way to give up a big play if you're too aggressive. And the Dolphins do get by more on just like raw blitzing aggression than they do actual pass rushing ability. It's like they need to be that aggressive to get to the quarterback. So I really can't see it any clearer than just total wild card scenario for Jones. And I guess hopefully Tony or Shepard, I don't know what the latest is on them, but hopefully.
Didn't sound good for I think I saw Dan Dugan, former Rutgers guy we remember from our college football days. He was saying that Tony, I don't think, was even stretching with the team today. So I'm going to go under the assumption that he's not going to be available once again. So the song remains the same when it comes to the Giants. And
no Shepard, I assume.
Pass catchers.
It'd be good to have Shepard because the slot is a little easier to attack on that defense. It's just the middle of the field's a little easier than the boundary. So it would be great to have Shepard back. But yeah, they're going to blitz and you know, hopefully Jones makes the right call. On the other side, I happen to think Gaskin's pretty good. I realize that his good fantasy games were just fluky touchdown and kind of like unnatural catch volumes occurring. But I think he's got enough ability that as the home favorites here, it could be another good spot for Gaskin. I don't know what to make, though, of that stupid offensive line. And maybe this is actually a bad matchup for Gaskin, because the Giants do have those huge guys in the front three. And maybe those huge guys do better against bad offensive lines like this. Maybe they collapse the pocket. I don't really know. But both of these teams are goofy and unreliable. And, you know, either team can just crater for no real reason.
Are we going to get a good Saquon Barkley game at some point?
If the Dolphins do a suicide blitz and Barkley somehow slips out for like a quick toss to the flats or something, and he gets an 80-yard touchdown, maybe then. But as far as the play-to-play reliability, I don't know if Barkley was ever that guy, and I especially don't know if he's that guy in a, you know, just dysfunctional, stupid offense that can't do anything well.
Yeah, I'm down on him as well right now. Disappointing to say the least. Let's get on over. Vikings, Lions, Vikings 7-point favorites on the road here going against their divisional rivals. Lions a little bit more well-rested, having come off of the Thanksgiving game where they gave the Bears a good game, a slightly more entertaining game than I was expecting on Thanksgiving. But Vikings, they just are addicted to playing crazy, crazy games. I think they've led by a touchdown in every game this season at one point or another. I think that they're like 2-2 or something in games where they've been leading by two touchdowns. Some, you know, just they are a chaotic team. They have a quarterback that will occasionally line up behind the guard for some reason. What's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know what their broader issue is. That they are a weird team. I mean, I guess they have a ton of drama surrounding them, and that can't help. It's like Zimmer's kind of on the hot seat, but also they have to do this thing where they pretend that he's, you know, the big guy in charge because he demands that level of authority and respect. But they know he's on the hot seat, and they know he hates Kirk, even though Kurt's like pretty good, but he's just so annoying and kind of unreliable, and that makes Zimmer resentful. But they have to work together, so it just festers. And of course, this Everson Griffin thing is a bummer. That can't be easy on them. The Dalvin Cook accusations, and somehow him being again like just barely in picture with that Everson Griffin thing. Like it's like Dalvin Cook's got to just always be in something really disturbing. Apparently, at least the past month or so, it's been that way. So there's a lot of things distracting them, and they were probably just goofy to begin with because of Cousins. So I don't trust them to cover exactly, but. On the other hand, I don't know how the Lions score a point against anybody.
Yeah, this is the matchup of, you know, for fantasy purposes, like the handcuff game, because you do have Alex Mattison on one side. He's rostered everywhere, of course. Jamal Williams, someone that probably got picked up in most spots given the DeAndre Swift injury. How confident are you in starting either of these guys, and can you go a level further as far as the backfield depth for either of these teams? Is a Kenne Nwangwu interesting to you this week, for example? He's drawn a little bit of interest for me. Godwin runs a 4-3.
Godwin Igwebuike or whatever. Is that guy just a gunner, or is he a real running back now? I can't tell how much they like him. Anyway, I think Jamal Williams is going to get as much carry volume as there is to go in that offense. I don't really trust that there will be much. Like, I think he might get 5 carries on the first drive and then finish the game with like 12 or, you know, 13 carries. As if Cousins plays like he should, then Minnesota should kind of just pull away steadily, if not right away in this game. And I do think Alex Mattison will be fine. Like, he's not anywhere close to Dalvin Cook, but I think Mattison is pretty clearly in that category where he's good enough to be your starter. And if the rest of your offense is good anyway, he's good enough to be your starter. And he's not going to be a star, but you won't really care. He's good enough.
Okay. All right. That definitely checks out. I'll be starting Jamal Williams in our pentathlon league, but that's like 12 people, but it's super flex, big rosters. So those are the kind of leagues where you can fire him up this week. All right, Eagles, Jets, Eagles, 6.5-point favorites on the road, playing in the same stadium they played in a week ago, away from home, though. And they're going up against the Jets team. We know that they are hard to even really put a good descriptor on what this Jets team is right now. Eagles, one of the hotter teams in the NFL for the past like 5 or so weeks before last week's clunker. Which one is it?
I love how just bad the league is this year. Like,
it's insane. These are just bad teams everywhere. Nobody's good.
Like the earlier games or the previous games we were talking about, it's the Colts were really hot for a while there, 6-6. Like this, the Dolphins picking up some steam, like 4-8. Like Eagles, they're getting hot, and by that I mean 5-6, right before they lose to the Giants. But I think the Eagles made things harder on themselves than it needed to be, I think, last week by going too pass happy early in the game. It's like they had specifically that success when they changed the offense from what it had been in the first 6 weeks to however long their hot streak was. They had changed it from like a 35-40 pass attempt offense to a 20-25. And with the usage with the diverted usage going to the ground game, and specifically, I guess you'd say Jordan Howard and kind of like the power ground game. And that made all the sense in the world to me. That's exactly what I thought they should have done. It's like, that's how you make Jalen Hurts' limitations as a passer not matter. And just you bring out the best of everybody on the offense that way. And I don't know if Miles Sanders got nicked up in that game. I couldn't find what was going on with that, but they got Boston Scott a bunch of carries. And not until late in the game, though. It's like it started out with something like 10, 15 pass attempts for Hurts to something like 8 running back carries. I'm just guessing. That's not the right number. But that was a difference from the games where they were doing well. And coincidentally or not, they fell behind in this case doing it that way. And they kind of caught up late, obviously. But 3 interceptions on that sort of pass attempt volume isn't going to work. You're not going to win that game. 9 times out of 10. So that was at once something that I think you could have predicted would happen with them running their offense that way. But it's also something that's easily fixed if they just stick to what they knew, what they had a good enough sense to do the first 6 weeks before last week. Just start doing that again. And the Jets will make that easy. I don't know if the Eagles offense could fail here if they tried. The Jets defense is the worst in the league. So I think Jalen Hurts should bounce back here, at the very least in the efficiency sense. Maybe he doesn't get to 30 plus pass attempts and maybe doesn't get to 12 plus carries, but I think it'll be kind of a walk in the park for him and that whole offense.
Yeah, I'm more so expecting the bounce back performance this week from them. On the Jets side, is there anything that they can exploit offensively against this Philly D?
I don't know how much of their struggles are just to do with Zach Wilson or how much it might have to do with Corey Davis not being on the field. Davis being out definitely hurt them. Right. It would be nice to have Davis here to lock up Darius Slay, because otherwise Slay can fall. Well, geez. I mean, they might put Slay on Elijah Moore instead of Davis, but I guess we'll see. It would be good to have Moore free in any case. It would be good to have Moore against Steven Nelson or Avante Maddox. That would be better. So there's a way they can get a couple decent matchups there. But again, like it's a little disheartening that as soon as Zach Wilson came back, they started looking like the Jets of the first 4 weeks again. It's like the fun shootout offense was just gone. So I don't know if they brought that upon themselves with their game plan somehow. But if it has to do with Wilson more so, then I don't see why they would improve anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm not ready to fully jump ship on Wilson. You know, I wasn't particularly big on him during draft season, but for this year, I mean, it's just it's not going to get better.
Yeah, and I still don't like him as a prospect. I didn't like that pick, but it's not because of his numbers this year. Like, they're concerning, but sometimes rookie years just go this way for no real reason. Sometimes it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. Before we get on to the next game, a quick word from our sponsors over at Blue Wire.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, moving on. We've got Cards, Bears, Cardinals, 7.5-point favorites going into Chicago. Cold weather game for a dome team. How do you see this one playing out?
David Montgomery, I guess, could make it interesting. Him and Khalil Herbert, like in cold weather. If your run defense isn't sharp, those guys can keep the chains moving on you in the, at the very least. But generally, I do like the Arizona side of this, even at the 7.5. I realize that's a lot of points for a road team that has had a pretty bad offense due to injury for about a month now. But the Arizona defense, I think, is spectacular. And I think it could be the kind that's really tough on a guy, a rookie quarterback like Justin Fields. So I don't even mean to be disrespectful toward the Bears. It's more like a respect for the Arizona defense. But I think the Arizona defense is why they've been as good as they have been this year. Because Kyler Murray's been hurt as long as he has, it's the defense that's more so responsible for their position. And I think this could be, you know, just fresh meat for that defense, basically.
Right, exactly. I mean, both these teams fairly well rested. You know, Fields comes back. That could help things or get, you know, give a little bit more of an exotic look for this Bears offense compared to, you know, if Andy Dalton's back there. But do we think that, you know, the Cardinals?
Oh, sorry, I forgot about the whole Fields ribs injury. It's bad for Dalton too if he's in there. He'll get swallowed up. The thing that's so tough about this Arizona defense is they've got a lot of pass rush ammo just in general. But then they also don't give you really easy reads before the snap. It's like anybody can do anything, and you don't really find out for sure until after the snap. And unless you guess right before the snap where everyone's going, you might have some, you know, just thought into your mind like, hey, what's that? And, you know, throws off your route, your steps just enough. And Chandler Jones could just like rip your head off in under 2 seconds, even if it gets, you know, beyond that point.
Very true. Very true. Chandler Jones, scary dude coming off the edge. Let's get on over. We got Chargers, Bengals. I think that this game is going to be one of the more popular ones for DFS this week. We got a couple of high total games to get to here in this next little bit. Bengals at home. They obviously looked great against the Steelers. I think some of that had to do, like the Bengals offense was amazing. I don't know if their defense is going to be able to hold the Chargers in check, but the Chargers have been very Jekyll and Hyde throughout the course of this season. Obviously get the big win over Pittsburgh themselves a couple weeks ago and then don't perform as well against Denver a week ago. So what are your expectations on this game?
So I really like Justin Herbert, but I do think the Chargers offense is reaching a sort of equilibrium that's generally not favorable toward him. And when they have good weeks, and it's basically just because of him outplaying the circumstances and just kind of, you know, going psycho and carrying the whole team himself. And you can't really expect him or any star quarterback really to be that way all the time. And especially when you're dealing with an offense like this one, where he doesn't have any speed to work with. And I wish it didn't go this way, but I really do think this is specifically what I was worried about in the preseason, especially after they got rid of Tyron Johnson, where you're not playing 10 on 11 necessarily, by having Josh Palmer or Jalen Guyton at that one receiver spot. Let's just say it's 11 on 11, even though I do think it's sooner 10 on 11. You're playing with an extra defender, basically, when you give the defense that sort of artificial back of the end zone because you can't run farther than that before the pass rush gets to the quarterback. Like you can't get farther than 20 yards reliably with this personnel. So you might as well be running a red zone drill every single snap, no matter where you are on the field. And that sideline is an extra defender. The defenses use that as leverage to account for where they need to go to cut off whichever routes they need to. And that's something they'll deal with every single play until they get better wide receiver personnel, and specifically fast wide receiver personnel. So that's not going to change. The Cincinnati pass rush can be pretty vicious. So I think the Cincinnati defense rocked the Steelers in both games. And I think the Chargers have a similar flaw as the Steelers. And it's not that the quarterback sucks, but the way the quarterback fails is the same, because Roethlisberger can't push downfield. The field just shrinks on them. The things that used to work, there's no room for it anymore. It all eventually just kind of falls apart, especially because that pass rush gets there. And if that happens here, And I think it will, if only because the receivers can't push far enough downfield to beat the pass rush. I think it kind of, I would pick the Bengals to cover this kind of easily. I think the Bengals can win by a touchdown or more, actually.
I think so too. And you know, I think what's been great about the Bengals throughout a lot of the course of the season has been obviously the passing game, Joe Burrow coming back strong off of the injury, Ja'Marr Chase, kind of rope-a-doping a lot of us in the preseason and coming out and obviously establishing himself as a rookie wide receiver one. But in recent weeks, and this makes me nervous for my best ball results, very light on Joe Mixon shares, and that guy is crushing it right now. Do you expect that to continue on Sunday?
Yeah, I think that it'll be interesting to see if the Chargers keep approaching things the same as they have all year, because they basically kind of surrendered the run. They're almost doing like the Mike Pettin thing, but because Brandon Staley is kind of like the hot recent coaching prospect and people generally think of him as a smart guy instead of a stupid oaf like Mike Pettin, they were kind of looking at it favorably coming into this year. Like the analytics guys were kind of like, this guy's really onto something. He knows that you don't need to defend the run as much as you need to defend the pass. This is going to work out great. And it turns out it actually kind of sucks when you don't stop the run, and it hurts the whole defense. It eventually will make your pass defense unravel too, because you can't just let them keep moving the ball on you. And yet, if you don't play the Bengals that way, you do risk Ja'Marr Chase getting back. Not just him, T. Higgins too can go deep on you. So I don't know where it's going, or I don't know that it's going to happen, of course, but I think that the Bengals offense will score points, and maybe it's all three of those guys, but I think it's at the very least Mixon will either have a huge game, or I think both Higgins and Chase could. I think Tyler Boyd might get the toughest matchup there against Harris, but I think Higgins still has positive regression to cash in on, and I think Chase has had a cold enough stretch here that he's ready to kind of like reinforce his baseline and come through with, like, you know, both of them get 100 yards maybe.
Yeah, I totally passing game stacked against the Raiders with the Bengals a couple weeks ago, and then it was Mixon day. I did not get the memo. So I don't know. Might go back to the well. Might go Mixon.
You would think it's Mixon day here, unless the Chargers say, okay, we got to change something. We're getting wrecked on the run defense every play. We got to do something different here. But if they don't, Mixon, yeah, gets the easy 120 or so, I would guess.
I think so as well. Before we get on over to Bucks, Falcons, got a message from our friends over at WinBet. There's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire. It's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at Baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 6 states. That's Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's WynnBet, WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. We also got a message from our friends over at Yahoo, specifically Yahoo DFS. The NFL season is heating up, and Yahoo is going big on daily fantasy football this season. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the year on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contest now being shark-free. To celebrate Yahoo going big on DFS as well as Yahoo Daily Fantasy becoming shark-free, Yahoo is giving all users the opportunity to claim a free $10 in site credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 in site credit offer to join any paid contest, including Yahoo's biggest contest, the weekly $1 million DFS NFL Baller Contest. The weekly $1 million contest features $1 million in total prizes, including first place receiving $100,000 and tons of overlay in prizes. Play daily fantasy football on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim that free $10 offer and to get started. Again, that's sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome. All right, Bucks, Falcons. We got a high over under here. I think it might be too high. I don't trust this Falcons offense to hold up their end of the
51 to nothing.
Yeah.
Is that possible? Can you do that?
I think so. I mean, it's going to be
eight touchdowns with a failed two pointer every time. And then
they really must have an axe to grind with Arthur Smith or something.
Goal. Yeah.
Yeah. This one, I like the Bucks. It pretty much every angle that you can get to, but I think 50.5 is too much. I mean, unless it is like a 42-10 type of game.
51-0, John. 50,
okay.
51-0. They'll have some really sketchy, like holding call, like illegal contact penalties on the defense as Tom Brady throws a fourth quarter, like 45 seconds left touchdown to get them to 51.
So we're talking about like a 07 Patriots level of disrespect going on in this one.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how much they feel like testing things out or whatever. Like, I don't know. First of all, is Antonio Brown back finally? He should be back for this, right? It's been 6 weeks or something.
It has been, but at the same time, I mean, he's just a tough cookie to figure out. Hasn't been practicing as of Thursday, so I don't think it looks particularly good for his chances.
I wonder if he's just like so unstable, he goes out and like gets into ATV accidents when he's supposed to be rehabbing or something, and that's why he keeps getting pushed back. I don't know. Anyway, it's weird that he's not back. AJ Terrell, I guess, is shutting down one half of the field pretty much for the Falcons. So whoever's on the other side, and they haven't moved Terrell to the other side, so the Buccaneers should be able to just put Mike Evans on Fabian Moreau every play if they want. That should be a green light all day. Chris Godwin's got a really easy matchup in the slot. I don't know how they score fewer than 35 points here. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. This is all green lights for the Bucks. On the Falcons side of things, I mean, it's again such a mess. Other than Cordarrelle Patterson, it's almost impossible to trust anyone right now. So, I mean, can you even feel comfortable starting a guy like Kyle Pitts against this pass defense?
Yeah. I mean, not
that's always there.
Not in the sense that you're like, oh, that's money in the bank for sure. But it's like you're in a good position if you have Kyle Pitts, like a tight end. You've got a good thing there, even if it's not as consistent as it maybe could have been.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much a fair way to put it. But otherwise, I don't know if I'm targeting too much of this offense outside of Cordarrelle Patterson. You know, I'm not chomping at the bit to get Olamide Zaccheaus or Tajae Sharpe or Russell Gage into my lineups.
I do like Olamide a little bit if he were the slot guy, but it's Gage, and I don't. That often sucks. I hate it.
It's very bad. Big day for Lenny coming.
Maybe, but Ronald Jones, I mean, if he's ever going to do anything, it would have to be here, I would think. Like, this Falcons team cannot compete.
It's a wonder they've made it this far this season with that roster. Let's go on over football team Raiders. We got the football team 2.5-point road underdogs going up against Vegas. Vegas, obviously, maybe the story of Thanksgiving with their thrilling win over the Cowboys. Washington coming off the funky game Monday night out in Landover, Maryland. How do we see this one going? How do these two teams match up? We obviously referenced that Raiders pass rush earlier potentially having an impact on Washington's deep passing game ability to kind of let plays develop.
Yeah, so if Washington can manage that pass rush, then Terry McLaurin can run away from pretty much anybody, but Casey Hayward is not fast. He's never been fast. He doesn't want to cover for more than like 3.5 seconds. So that's where I think the tension lies. And I don't know which way it's going to go. I mean, I feel like it's almost a random result each week. It's like you look at some of these matchups where Heineke's done well, and going into it, you wouldn't have really thought it, or at least you would have looked at a game on the schedule where he did poorly and sooner thought, oh, that's a good matchup. So just because it looks good or bad doesn't necessarily mean anything. And I don't really know on what basis it hinges. So don't really know how to call it, but I do think the Vegas offense projects pretty well. Like their baseline functions should be pretty productive here. Maybe they don't get that much going on the ground. Like it could be another inefficient day in terms of yardage for Josh Jacobs, but I think Jacobs is playing well and I like his touchdown odds here. I think it's just the offense has kind of had some difficult circumstances for him to work with, even aside from the injury from earlier this year. So touchdown chances I like quite a bit, but Washington has been good against running backs. So if they're good against Jacobs here, I think they could just be sooner forcing their own demise by Darren Waller. And I don't know which they find preferable.
Right. And we'll see what's going on with Waller as well.
Sorry. I forgot about him. So we were talking about Renfro before. This is a really good setup for him. And I mean, I guess we might want to start wondering about DeSean Jackson in some of these.
I'm in on that.
Even in the more mainstream leagues, he's the same guy. He's the exact same guy. So, if they keep taking Zay Jones' snaps and lowering them, giving them to Jackson, that's going to make everybody in that offense. And even Bryan Edwards, I think, can get going if they keep establishing this DeSean Jackson threat vertically.
I'm so embarrassingly overweight on Bryan Edwards this year in my league. Actually,
he's had a few really good games, though, for like best ball, and you weren't really picking him to start exactly. Like we knew Derek Carr doesn't really suit his skill set, but yeah, they're needlessly making everything worse by having him run about 4 or 5 yards downfield on average, further than he should. So hopefully DeSean can kind of pick up that slack and they can get Edwards more to like a 12-yard average depth of target or something.
Yeah, just sending him a little bit too far. Let Jackson do that. He's obviously still capable of doing that. Let's head on over. We got a potential barn burner here. No, we don't. We got the Jaguars, almost 2 touchdown underdogs, heading out to Los Angeles to face.
Why
the
only 13?
I don't know. I guess because the Rams have gone ice cold.
Yeah, I guess. So. I would, if it were 17 and a half points and John Walford at quarterback, I would just be like, Rams. Big time. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess they could sort of just Sony Michel the game away and only win by 10, but I can't see it. I can't see them failing to cover for any other reason.
I don't either. I think this is all systems go for the Rams. This is a get right spot for them at home after obviously
their defense could cover.
Yeah, they honestly could
win 13-0 with two defensive touchdowns, missed extra point. There we go.
Why not? Let's go Ravens Steelers. Ravens 4-point favorites on the road in this divisional matchup. Mario, I was at the Big Crab Cake on Sunday night watching the Ravens play one of the uglier games I've seen in person, but I was happy to see them come away with the win. That made it getting home at 1:30 in the morning a little bit more palatable. God, that's just a long day.
That game sucked.
It stunk out loud. Stunk on ice, as they used to say in cartoons in the 90s. But, you know, much has been made of Lamar Jackson's struggles in that game, coming off the illness, which forced him to miss the Chicago game, of course. Do we think that he bounces back here? I don't think that the Steelers' defense is as scary as we anticipated or as many anticipated. And I think also on the other side, the Steelers' offense kind of makes things a little bit tougher on the defense because they have so many three and outs, so many short drives, give up the short fields, that type of stuff. So where does your opinion lie on this particular game?
So I would pick the Ravens. I am a little worried about them going to Pittsburgh, and the Steelers will always show up for a game like this. It's like, even when they suck, they show up for this game. So I don't expect it to be easy, but I do think that you beat the Steelers the exact same way you beat the Browns, and you sell out against not so much specifically the run, but you sell out in the first 12 yards. Like just have someone watch those two receivers and everybody else. You watch the run, and Roethlisberger can't really take advantage of the middle of the field the way a check down quarterback needs to get by. He's just kind of like too slow to be the quick hitter. He's both check down dependent and like too slow to check down properly. So you just want to like crowd that part of the field, and he will take that shot deep every so often. And especially if your corner is like biting on the double move from Deontay Johnson, they will go deep if your coverage totally blows it. But if you just don't bite, like they can take that 6 yard curl over and over. Eventually, one of these times, Roethlisberger is going to miss a little bit, or Deontay Johnson's going to not quite catch it, and it's going to be a tip drill. Like, that's how you get them to screw up. It's just make them keep moving the chains over and over and over. Because Roethlisberger, even though he can't throw, and even though he takes forever to set up, he does make the correct read if you leave open that deep shot. And he knows, mm-hmm. like, you just got to get the ball in the air. It's like with these rules we have now, it's like the interference, the illegal contact, just chuck it. Something good might happen, or it's a better option than the alternative anyway. So that's the way it could go wrong. And the Ravens do kind of bite too aggressively sometimes, so it's no small risk. But if they do keep the same discipline that they did against the Browns, I think they get ahead that way. But I'm actually still concerned about the Ravens offense. I don't think their problems have anything to do with the personnel. Lamar played just badly in that game. Right. Obviously the scheme wasn't the reason for the one interception, I guess you could argue. But I just hate the whole offense, and like I worry about Lamar kind of losing his wits out of just like frustration and like desperation of trying to make something happen. It's like he's making throws that even at Louisville as like a true freshman, he wasn't making throws like he did in that game. You know, it's like he stopped being himself, which is what I worry about with protracted struggles like these, which I attribute only to the scheme. And I have no faith that Greg Roman will ever figure it out. I don't think he can.
I think the offensive line's a huge problem in Baltimore too. I think Villanueva is beyond washed. I think there's a reason why Pittsburgh let him walk. They don't really have a good answer on the right side. The interior of the line has been banged up for a lot of this year. So it felt like some of the problems that Lamar was having a week ago were kind of exacerbated by the fact that Cleveland's defensive front was just caving it in constantly and getting into the backfield, forcing Lamar to just kind of drop back really far and throw a prayer.
You don't really see any quick hitting routes in this Ravens offense, do you? It's like you see,
and they're using like Hollywood Brown for the quick hitters. Like he had a bunch of catches last week for like 60 yards.
Yeah, and they don't really have any staple plays that work underneath. It's like when they get something going underneath, it's always like a bubble screen or some sort of scripted thing for Brown or DuVernay or whoever. And they don't have any plays that you see as a staple route in, for instance, the Josh McDaniels offense. Like, you don't see Lamar Jackson do a play action to his tight end the way Baker Mayfield does 15 times a game. The only kind of pass that Baker Mayfield ever completes doesn't even exist in the Baltimore offense. And that's why I am so sick of Roman. Is like I know he has like certain things he's trying to do. I realize that there's a theory that he has in mind that isn't just failing like he does in practice. But the point is he's making it needlessly difficult by not trying things that we know are specifically the plays you go to beat the defensive tendencies that the Ravens are seeing. It's like if you're dealing with a bad pass blocking situation, then stop calling 7-step drops. Stop calling pass routes that don't break the stem until like 14 yards downfield. Start calling some quick crossers. Get DuVernay a shovel pass the way Garoppolo tosses it to Deebo Samuel. Do something like that. And like none of these plays exist. It's just they keep doing these deep drops where, you know, Andrews and Brown are running like 15 yards downfield. And sometimes the defense blows the coverage and Lamar throws it. But if the defense doesn't blow the coverage, and they probably won't, then Lamar has to kind of just, you know, scramble around for two quarters before eventually saying, okay, I'm going to start running every other drop back now. And that's when the Ravens win, basically.
Yeah, they've won ugly many, many different times this season. They really haven't had like a convincing pretty victory. I think
where's the screen passes game. Like where and I don't mean bubble screens. It's like you don't see just like a if they're blitzing, and if Lamar's not getting enough time to do his 5 and 7 step drops, and if you just cannot call a three step drop for some reason, then how about a blitz beater? Anything. Like there's nothing that Roman ever brings out other than let's call a bubble screen and hope that they don't know that that's our only other play. They do.
Yeah. Yeah, Roman needs to be more adaptable. That much is for sure. Before we get on to our final couple of games here, we got a message from our friends over at Thrive Fantasy. Thrive is back for another season of fantasy football, and they're running huge guaranteed contests each week of the NFL season. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus only on the top tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Sign up today and get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you claim your free RotoWire subscription. First, visit rotowire.com/thrive. Ben, Second, you deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. Three, play in your first paid contest and receive a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. So again, head on over to rotowire.com/thrive for more details. All right, we got one more Sunday afternoon game, and then we got the Niners. So we got the 49ers going to Seattle to face the Seahawks, the Seahawks that are kind of playing out the string here at this point. It's just a mess with what they've got going on. That the Niners have been playing well for their part in recent weeks, but Deebo Samuel banged up. That definitely changes things. What's going on here?
Well, it does change things, but I think it only just means that Ayuk and Kittle do that much more. I don't think the Seahawks can stop or even slow them. I don't think you need good play from Garoppolo to light up a defense like this one. Elijah Mitchell could have another big game. Bobby Wagner does not want to track Elijah Mitchell to the sideline. Not at this point in time. I mean, Bobby Wagner could have handled that before, but his legs don't go like they used to. And Elijah Mitchell, I don't know. Obviously, some of his success has to do with like the Shanahan scheme and probably the 49ers blocking and whatever. But it seems like Elijah Mitchell might just kind of be really good.
Yeah.
Production wise, there's not really any reason to hold him that much farther back. At the moment, you would take him over someone like Ezekiel Elliott, even. Not necessarily dynasty, but like for this year, this point in time, you would. And this is another like total green light. Like other than that Texas Tech one, it's like those linebackers can be kind of slow, especially Wagner. They have these small, like 5'9", 180 corners trying to play against this, you know, this offense that makes you tackle a lot. I just think the 49ers just kind of like crush them, especially if Russell Wilson's finger is still busted. And it didn't seem any better the last 2 weeks than the first. So I don't know why I would get my hopes up for the fourth week magically turning a corner.
Yeah, the Seattle team, I'm probably going to be betting against them the rest of the way. So the Niners seem to have found something and are healthy enough, even without Deebo Samuel. Really like Elijah Mitchell. We have him as RB5. For this week. So a lot of confidence that Mitchell will continue to produce in this spot. Chiefs, Broncos. Chiefs, 9.5-point favorites against the Broncos. Broncos coming off the win over the Chargers. Chiefs coming off that bye. They're at home. Sunday nighter. Which Chiefs are we going to see here?
I don't know. I feel a little anxious about the 10 points, the 9.5 points. I don't think that the Chiefs are very different on offense. I don't think they've learned anything in the past few weeks that would distinguish them from the start of the year. So I guess the one thing is Clyde Edwards-Helaire being back could change things, because I happen to believe that a lot of their troubles had to do with not being able to run the ball. And it, just as importantly, not getting the defense to care that they might run the ball. So Denver doesn't have to care about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and maybe they very well won't. And I guess we can see how that plays out if so. But if the safeties are playing, I'm trying to remember. I feel like Denver, if anything, kind of invites the big play. Like their defense, the pass defense has been good overall, but when they get beat, it's like someone's running past the safety in the corner, and they're both, the corner and the safety are pointing at each other, like, you know, that was your guy.
So the Chiefs have done that too this year.
Yeah, so the Chiefs defense also has been playing quite a bit better, which maybe that's the reason to believe that they cover rather than any profound change in their offense. But yeah, I think I don't know. I if Denver plays Kansas City the way like the Titans did, and the way most of the, as long as they don't play them like the Raiders, basically, I think Kansas City might struggle to get their passing game going the way they want to. And sometimes Andy Reid has a habit of staying away from the run too long. Like, he has too much faith in the averages, and he doesn't notice things like, you know, your passing game really just doesn't have it today. It's like, yeah, over the broader sample, they would, but right now they don't. And you need to see that before it's too late in the game and you know, go to the run too late for it to be an advantageous approach. So if Denver is selling out deep, then Kansas City needs to see that and like commit to Edwards-Helaire until they get those safeties creeping up, and that's the way they can make it work. But if Reed does that thing where he, you know, it's
but 3 minutes left, master of the bye week. He's the master.
That's true. I guess we got to remember that. So like maybe he'll be particularly sharp with his reasoning. But if he does that thing where it's like 4 minutes left in the second quarter and Clyde Edwards-Helaire has, you know, 5 carries for 21 yards, like that's when I worry, because I don't think Denver will be like, I don't think Denver's just going to turn Tyreek Hill loose the way like the Buccaneers did last year.
Right, exactly. So this game, I think it'll be divisional games on Sunday night usually are pretty good. So looking forward to this one. Quickly, your thoughts on Bills Patriots as we wrap up here on Monday night.
Well, the loss of Tre'Davious White's pretty big for the Bills. They have a very particular way they run things, and his speed is usually very necessary for it to work. But I don't know if Nelson Agholor is a good enough downfield threat for it to matter here. And as good as Mac Jones has been, it's kind of crazy to me, the coverage that's just like crowning him, not just, you know, MVP and rookie or whatever. It's like he's humanity's last hope, is what a lot of media would have you believe lately. It's like he's had a really easy schedule. He does not do much lifting on that team. That's a defensive team, a run game based defensive team. So those two things might carry them to a win here, but if it can't, I do think you see Mac Jones look more like he did before, like all year before the schedule got really easy the past 6 weeks, before they started playing like the Titans and the post-collapse Browns and the Jets two times. Like, this is a very different defense than the kind of ones that Jones has been playing against.
Yeah, so I think that's the big storyline in this one is A, how the Buffalo defense responds sans Trey White, and also can Mac Jones keep things going against a better defense, and does New England kind of have those weapons to make Buffalo pay for the absence of Tre'Davious White. But that's going to wrap things up for us here on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, again brought to you by our friends at WinBet. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.